I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source with Michael Russo. Thanks as always for tuning in. My guest today, Maddie Hendricks, the former Blaine High School Bengals star hockey player, star quarterback, catcher in baseball, played 4 years at St. Cloud State where he was a captain his senior year and went on to play 607 NHL games, mostly with the Edmonton Oilers and the Washington Capitals, but he also played with the Wild, the Nashville Predators, Colorado Avalanche, and I believe Winnipeg Jets. I believe I got them all. Just a great human being, great in the community, gives back to the military. We'll talk a lot about that during the show, but we'll also talk about some of the Wild prospects, from Matt Boldy and Kalen Addison to Marco Rossi, Philip Lindbergh and Sam Henschkes. We'll also, of course, talk to him about Philip Johansson and what the Wild's plans are for him in the future. So just a really fun show on his transition from being a hockey player to being somebody that's in the front office with the Minnesota Wild over two regimes now. First with Paul Fenton, originally hired, now with Billy Guerin. And again, being Bomber's right-hand man with the Wild. Let's talk about the Wild the last couple of weeks. Man, they've just been sort of all over the map in terms of their play. They have two big wins in Vegas. You think they're coming home confident. Then they come home and play the Colorado Avalanche in the first of two games. First game didn't play very well, wound up losing 5-4. Second game beats the crap out of them, 8-3. They tie a franchise record with 8-4. So what do they do to encore that? They go to St. Louis and they have their worst loss in franchise history. 9-1, their most lopsided loss in franchise history. Most goals against. Kaapo Kähkönen broke Josh Harding's record by being in net for 9 goals. He hasn't played since, obviously, because they've only played one game in the first game of this four-game homestand was postponed to May 12th against the St. Louis Blues. And 18 goals in his last three starts, Kaapo Kähkönen. So that is a big concern here, because usually when a goalie's not playing well like this, you want to sort of get him back in, especially young goalie, and give him a confidence boost again and let him rediscover his game. But Cam Talbot's playing well and the team needs to get wins. So Cam will start against the Arizona Coyotes on a Wednesday afternoon, a change of time, 1 p.m. from 7 o'clock. And then they do have back-to-back games against the San Jose Sharks this weekend, so it would be a prime time to get Kaapo in. But if Talbot continues to play well, we've seen Talbot play back-to-back before, and the fact that Kaapo's game has just taken a turn for the worse, we do have to wonder what Dean Evason's plans will be for the weekend games against San Jose. We'll see on that one. In terms of the trade deadline, quiet, which was what was expected. Billy Guerin pretty much painted that picture before, that unless there was something special, that he can make a hockey trade for the future, that he probably wouldn't go after rentals. They did investigate Nick Foligno, but the second that became a first-round pick and 2 firsts for Toronto, Minnesota very comfortably bowed out of that. And in terms of hockey trades, even that was very, very complicated, because, again, they've got to re-sign Kaprizov, Fiala, and Erickson Ek this summer, probably Hartman, maybe re-sign Ian Cole. Well, they don't have infinite cap space. So if all of a sudden you make a hockey trade and you bring in a player with term and you have to protect that player in expansion, which one would think you would have to, it could further complicate things there. So, I just did not feel like a time that they were going to make a lot of noise at the trade deadline. And as we know by now, that certainly came into fruition. The game against Arizona, the Wild have to get going. They'll get the lines back together. Marcus Foligno will return for the first time since March 12th. He's missed 15 games with a broken ankle. He admitted that the other day. And we'll see if that, now getting back with Erickson Ek and Greenway, can get that line back together. Erickson Ek hasn't been very good lately. Greenway has been really poor lately. So they've got to get those two going again and maybe getting them back to their identity in a shutdown role without an offensive guy like Kaprizov on the right wing can maybe do that. It also will reunite Zuccarello and Kaprizov with Rask. They actually played that last game together in St. Louis, a game the Wild played really well. I hadn't mentioned that. And then all of a sudden, the last minute, a fluky goal against with an extra attacker like Mike Hoffman. Talbot's rebound goes right to the one place it couldn't, off Dumba and in, ties the game. And then 2 seconds left In overtime, Ryan O'Reilly scores an amazing backhanded wraparound goal to take a game where the Wild looked like they responded really well to the 9-1 loss and just turned it into a very, very disappointing overtime loss where the Wild now enter this homestand having lost three of the last four games. So they're going to try to get on track. They have one game against Arizona, then two against San Jose, then they head out to Arizona for two, go to LA, and then on to San Jose, then they come back for a homestand. We're getting to the end here where the Wild are now jockeying for playoff position. Right now, they would play the Vegas Golden Knights in the first round of the playoffs. The Wild are 10-2-2 all time against the Golden Knights, 4-1-1 against them this season. But obviously, the playoffs are a different animal. Without further ado, just a really good podcast, an informative podcast with Minnesota Wild Assistant Director of Player Development, Matt Hendricks. And as mentioned, Matty Hendricks, the assistant player, director of player development for the Minnesota Wild, Brad Bombardier's right-hand man, former Blaine Bengal, star quarterback, star hockey player, star baseball player, went on to play 4 years at St. Cloud State. And where do you want to start, Matt? First of all, the new role, you're in your second season now or third?
Second
season.
Second year, yeah.
I mean, first of all, you know, you played till age 37. You played several hundred NHL games. What's that first year like when you realize, all right, you know what? I'm in an absolute different role in my life right now and a different role in hockey.
Well, you know what? To be honest, it's kind of feels like you're a rookie again. you're trying to figure out how things work. You're trying to figure out what you need to do and where you need to be. You get so used to life in the NHL and you take a job like this. Now you've got to create your own schedule, organize your own flights and rental cars and hotel rooms. It's kind of eye opening, and it makes you realize you don't know as much as you thought you did about the game.
No team services person to do your flights. I hope that a good sports writer sat down with you and told you about Marriott points and Delta points and all that type of stuff.
Well, you know what, Brad Bombardier, I think he's in his 11th year now, so he's got a real good feel on this job, and he's been tremendous in helping me out.
And obviously, Matt, I mean, this is not an easy time to be traveling. You know, we're starting to get back to normal here, but you take on this role in the middle of a pandemic, essentially. How did that change what would traditionally be a role where you'd probably travel a ton to life in the times that we've been in the last year?
You know, it really threw us for a loop. You put the kids, the prospects first, and you really feel for them and what they've gone through this season in terms of their development and all the question marks that were there kind of asking and looking at moving into the season. You know, for Bomber and I, we'll just take last season, for example. You're on the road a lot. You know, it's kind of a weekend job in the sense that, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're gone and you're out either seeing your college prospects, let's say at Boston College, or you're up in Moncton watching Alex Kovanov play, or you're out on the West Coast watching Adam Beckman play in Spokane. You know, you're moving around and trying to get your feelers on these kids about once or twice a month. And now the way things have gone, it's been a lot different. Bomber and I were able to see Sammy Henches at St. Cloud, Nick Sweeney up at Duluth, and then obviously spend a lot of our time with the Iowa Wild in the American League, where the year before I would probably get with them about once a month, you know, watch them from afar on video and such, but only be on the ice with them about once, maybe twice a month. So it's been a lot different this season, that's for sure.
Do you how often do you talk to usually prospects? I mean, is it constantly checking in with them? Like, what is the process?
We try to have, you know, like a 1 week kind of check-in in the sense that we understand what they're going through. We try to let them tell us how they think they're playing, how their game's going, how their life is in terms of, you know, the college kids with school and such and how they're doing there. And we just want to know, you know, as much information as we can without prying too much and kind of driving them crazy. But, you know, we want to know how they think they're doing, how they're playing, how their confidence level is. And obviously injuries are a big one too. We need to be aware of those as well. So we try to be in touch, you know, usually it's text messages once a week or so, and then we get on the phone with them, you know, every 2 weeks, at least once a month for sure.
And how do you divvy up the prospects, or do you divvy up the prospects? I mean, do you take the forwards, he takes the defensemen, or how does that work?
Well, we kind of thought of that, of maybe trying to do it that way, but it doesn't work out that well because there's obviously we don't have as many defensemen mm-hmm. as we do forwards. So, but we do kind of, we have our priority guys. You know, I have a group of players that I deal with a lot. And Bomber has, you know, his group of players that he deals with a lot, but there is also still a lot of crossover. You know, if let's say Matt Boldy was on Bomber's list of guys that he would talk to weekly or every other week, that doesn't mean I can't contact Matt and talk to him about right. his game and just, you know, shoot the breeze with him, see how he's doing.
Philip Lindbergh, UMass goalie, beats your Huskies in the NCAA championship. How conflicted were you there to talk to Matt, to Philip afterwards and congratulate him?
Well, you know what? I'm just happy for him and what a tremendous season he had. Obviously, my Huskies, Sammy Henches, I feel terrible for them. But at the end of the day, you know, we had three prospects in the final four teams, and how amazing is that? Yep. It really is. You got to give the scouts, the amateur guys, tons of credit for finding these high character players. And, you know, to kind of watch from afar, you're obviously cheering on the Huskies a bit. I can't lie to you there. But at the end of the day, what a great experience for our guys.
Billy Guerin said on the conference call a couple days ago, the Zoom, that you and Bomber were sort of taking the lead and talking to Henchkiss and Lindbergh about their futures. Do you expect them to go back to school, or is it potentially at least one of them maybe turning pro?
Well, and that's still up for debate right mm-hmm. now. The conversations are still on. They're still ongoing, and you know, you got to give these players the proper amount of time to sit back and think and kind of reflect on their year and on their development and see where they're at. So as far as I want to go on this podcast route, I'll just leave it there. But we are constantly in discussions with these guys right now.
Wild fans, just because he's local, see a lot of Sammy Henchkiss, Matt, but they don't probably know a ton about Philip Lindbergh. What type of goaltender is he?
Well, you know, he's not the tallest of goalies at 6'1", but what we like about him is he's got a competitiveness and character to his game where he puts kind of pressure on him. He wants to be the number one guy, and he competes in battles and practices, and he kind of took a big step for UMass this season. He had a little bit of an injury earlier in the season, but when he came back strong, and he did what he set out to do this year, and that was to take the net at UMass. So huge credit to him there in accomplishing that goal. And moving forward, obviously, I don't know a ton about the goaltending position, but we fall back on our goalie coaches a lot. And there are going to be some small tweaks to his game if he does decide to turn professional. But, you know, things that we're confident that he'll be able to adjust to and do just fine with.
Yeah, with a player like him, I mean, do you and Bomber kind of take the lead there, or do you even allow to guys like Richard Bachman, who's the goalie coach in Iowa, or even Freddie Shabbat up here in Minnesota, do they pay attention to those guys as well, or is that pretty much until they turn pro, that's when they'll get their hands on them?
No, our goaltending coaches, you know, especially with Iowa, Freddie Shabbat would have done it before, mm-hmm. but now doesn't spend quite as much time with our prospects as he would have when he was with Iowa. So Richard Bachman is keeping an eye on our guys quite a bit. He's in conversation with Philly Lindbergh, but we really do take the stance where we don't want to go in and disrupt what a player or a prospect is going through with his current coaching staff. You know, we're not going to go in and say, well, you should be doing this, when another coach may be saying, no, we want you doing this. So we try to kind of watch from afar and get knowledge on the player, get knowledge on the way he plays and performs every night, but at the same time, just kind of be a sounding board for him if he needs to talk or he wants to talk about that kind of stuff, his details in his game. Bachman would be the guy that would talk about that.
I want to talk to you about a lot about some of the other prospects as well, but let's talk about your life and early in your career, Maddie. I got to do, when you played for the Wild, a really cool feature about your upbringing with your parents, including your doppelganger, your dad, Doug. Right. I mean, I remember I was interviewing them behind section like 120 in the middle of either before the game or the first intermission of a game, and I just could not believe how much your father looked like you, or you look like your father is probably the better way to say it. But it was pretty interesting talking to him, because you right away see where you became Maddie Hendricks, the discipline of your dad, a former Marine, the nurturing of your mom. It just seemed like two great, great people.
Well, you know what? I'm not much different than any other hockey player. I think most of us give a lot of credit, or not all the credit, to our parents and the sacrifices that they made to allow us to play hockey and out of town tournaments. And let's not forget about the dollar amount that goes on hockey these days. So very fortunate to have my mom and dad in my corner and backing me all the way through my career. But yeah, aside from the sport, you learn a lot. And for me, the discipline from my father was very important. And obviously you mentioned the loving, nurturing mom I had. So I had two great people in my corner, Roos, and very thankful they're still, you know, around and part of helping now raise grandchildren. So it's exciting.
Yep. And you have two twins, right?
Yeah, boy, girl twins, Gunnar and Lennon, and they are in third grade. So
wow,
it's an exciting time. We just had my son had his first outdoor lacrosse practice yesterday in the snowstorm. So he still had fun. So I think that's a good sign.
So is he pretty much taking after you in terms of the multiple sports?
Yeah, he plays hockey, obviously, in the winter. He plays lacrosse now. He's on a fishing team in the summer months. So we're just trying to keep him as busy as we can. And he loves football in the fall. I think football is his passion right now.
And that is, I mean, you were, again, a quarterback in high school, a catcher in baseball, if I remember correctly. Obviously, yep. A hockey player. Fishing is also one of your biggest passions, right?
Yeah, I love fishing. So I get to guide the boat with some of these kids in the summer. And I tell you, it's a lot of fun. You've got kids that really know what they're doing with the rod in their hand. And then you've got some first timers that when they catch a big fish for the first time, like a big, let's say a largemouth bass, you can't put a price on the smile on their face. So we really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
If you haven't read the story that I wrote on Matt Hendricks, two or three years ago now, I'm trying to see the date. It would have been November 13th, 2018. I highly recommend Googling it or going to our site and looking for it. And I believe it's unlocked, so you don't even have to be a subscriber to The Athletic to read it. But it's about it's about your life and your career, but it's also about your upbringing and the way that you give back to the military. And one of my favorite parts of the story was just what you did for those two boys that you took out. I think it was you and Zach Bogosian, if I'm not mistaken, brought two boys out that were the kids of a Gold Star dad. And it was honestly, I talked to their mom and how appreciative she was of the way that you treated her kids and getting them out on a lake and fishing. Can you tell people about that story?
Yeah, it was outstanding, actually. We had, so first of all, I get a little background on it. Shane Hudella, out of Hastings, Minnesota, is a retired Army National Guard, had a few stints in Afghanistan and Iraq. And, you know, this guy has been just tremendous for all sports, but really, really has been dug deep in hockey. Brent Burns and Shane became really good friends when Burnsy was playing for the Wild, and they kind of started up this military charity, you know, to help kids with military parents. And it used to be called Defending the Blue Line. And now it's changed names to the United Heroes League because of getting other sports involved. So he's been just awesome, Bruce, with helping, you know, players in all sports get out and kind of use their platform to help these kids. So we had a couple years ago, we had a golf tournament, and one of the auction items was, you know, a fishing trip with Bogosian and myself. And this father got up and you know, he put quite a bit of money down on it. He won the auction, and he went over and gifted it to this mother and her kids. And we ended up bringing them out on Lake Minnetonka for the day. And actually, it turned out to be a great fishing day, too. I was a little bit nervous. You know, you get adults in the boat, sometimes you just fill the cooler and let them have fun. But you get kids in the boat, the pressure's on to catch fish. So, but it ended up being a great experience for Zach and I. And obviously, I think the kids had a lot of fun.
Yeah, too. It was just one of the small things
that Shane and the United Heroes League have done, and it's been really rewarding.
Yeah, I know it was really rewarding for the kids as well. Drake and Garrett were their names. Siobhan's the mom. You know, their late father was Ben. And and if I could say, because I did put in the story, so I don't think it's a secret, but the father that that picked up this auction as a gift was Tim Paling, the father of Ryan, Jack, and Nick Paling. And it was just an incredible thing that they did. And I remember I talked I believe I talked to Tim for the story as well, but it's just, I don't know. It's one of the most touching stories, just talking to Siobhan and how appreciative she was for her two boys that really absolutely needed something like this. And just having, you know, mentors like you on the boat, I think really made their day. So I highly recommend people reading it. Another really cool part of the story, it was in 2012. You actually were part of the USO tour that went over to the Middle East. And I think that was through the United Heroes League as well. How rewarding was that experience? And tell everybody about just all the stuff that you had to do to just get over there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was awesome. Obviously, things weren't going great here in the States in terms of hockey. The NHL, we were you know, locked out and we weren't playing. And Shane Hudela got the opportunity from the USO to go on the Chairman Joint Chiefs of Staff's holiday tour. So then it was General Martin Dempsey. So his wife kind of got to go through this giant stack of charities and pick a charity that deserved to go on this trip. And she picked Shane and Defending the Blue Line, and Shane invited me to go along with him. And you fly over on, I believe what they call it is Air Force Two. So you're surrounded by Navy SEALs and Army Rangers and just some of the coolest, highest character people that, you know, I've ever met. And to go over and spend, I think we were there 8 or 9 days, traveled around from where I'm trying to think of everywhere we were. We were in spots all over in Afghanistan. We were in Bagram at an Air Force base there. That was a cool experience. We landed. I got to land on an aircraft carrier and take off from an aircraft carrier. That was quite an experience. It was just an amazing, amazing time for us, and rewarding, and being able to talk to the troops and thank them face to face and shake their hand. I'm very, just very thankful for the opportunity to be able to.
Yeah, it was Bahrain and then Kyrgyzstan. Which is the northern entry point of Afghanistan.
Yep, that's right.
Yep, and then Bagram, Kandahar, and then you went to Germany on the way home. And I don't know if I ever told you, but so I tried to get in touch with General Dempsey for the story, and he actually called me, but it was after the story ran. I remember I picked up the phone once, and it was an assistant or secretary, and it was coming, I mean, essentially from the Pentagon, and I'm just like, I thought it was a joke at first, and then I was like super nervous to tell General Dempsey, well, like, you're not going to believe this. Story ran 2 weeks ago, you know, so it was like one of those things where it's just like, sorry, I've already written the story, but man, it is an honor to talk to you. So it's just,
what a cool, cool guy he is.
Yeah.
You talk about leadership. And that was, it was so fun to be able to sit and talk to him and listen to him, and cool experience.
Yeah. And I had a similar experience. I was doing a feature on Ryan Suter's 1,000th game once, and phone rings one day, and it's like, I'm like, hello. And he's like, Mike. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, this is Governor Walker. And I'm like, what? Like, I didn't expect it. Like, I'm like, so Scott Walker, well, the governor's mansion is Ryan Suter's next door neighbor in Wisconsin. Okay. So they became really good friends, Governor Walker. And so I call Governor Walker for the story. I leave basically a message for him to call me. And it's like a week and a half before the gubernatorial election in Wisconsin. I'm like, well, there's no way he's going to call me. And like a week late, like I'm telling you, we're talking like 4 days before the election that he lost, by the way. He calls me up for this Ryan Suter story. And I just could not believe that the governor of Wisconsin, 4 days before his essentially career was on the line, was on the phone with me. It was just hilarious. So,
that's just a great example. People just love to talk.
Yeah, I know. It was really cool. And actually, you know what? It's funny that you said that, Matt, because that's what Governor Walker said to me at the time. He goes, it is just refreshing not to talk politics right now. So I just remember I'm sitting in my condo, like about to go outside on the phone with Governor Wisconsin. I'm just like, this is crazy. I'm talking in hockey with the governor. So just, it was just funny.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's cool. That's a good story.
Matt, let's talk a little bit more about, well, first of all, your parents actually, you said that they went down to Arizona, but then they actually got to see you at an Iowa Wild game a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, they were driving back north to Minnesota, and you know, I think the bad weather might have been coming here, so they wanted to spend one more day in the warmth of Iowa. So they swung into Des Moines last Friday to watch a game, and you know, it was great to see them. It was their first hockey game in obviously a while due to the pandemic, so they were happy. They got to see a good game, and you know, I got to talk to them just briefly after, so a lot of fun.
And they got to see Matt Boldy's first professional goal. What'd they think of that?
Yes. You know what? And I told my dad, I said, keep an eye on number 12 tonight. It's his first game. And he showed up and delivered. It was good. You know, Matt Boldy, we can start with him too, if you want.
Yeah.
He had a really good 2-year career at Boston College. Really, really came out of a shell, at the World Juniors this year. Man, was he a tremendous player for the U.S. team. And then, went back to Boston College, finished the season strong and came into Iowa and performed right away. So Matt's a very, very smart player. You know, his hockey IQ is almost off the charts. Tremendous skill, big player. He's working on the pace of his game right now in terms of trying to play at a faster pace. And I think you see it, you know, I think you saw it when he went from college to the World Juniors, his pace climbed up. And then it might have went back down to the level he was playing at. And now he steps into the American Hockey League and his pace climbed up again. So I think he's a player that plays at the pace that he needs to play at to find success and still maintain that high skill level that he has.
Do you have to, you know, with somebody like him that did burn the first year, that knows that there's always a chance that he could be called up either during the regular season or playoffs, do you have to talk to somebody like that to just say, look, keep your eye on the ball, you know, take advantage of Iowa, prove you're a professional and let the rest take care of itself. If you deserve to get up there, you'll get up there. But otherwise, you know, focus on Des Moines.
Right. You know what? That's the message from Bomber and I, and, you know, I think from the entire organization. But Matt is—he's that type of high character kid where you're almost saying it to say it, but mm-hmm. He knows it. You don't really need to tell him, but you're kind of reiterating the fact. He's driven. You know, he's a player that you don't really need to motivate that much. He's a driven individual that has that fire inside him that's pushing him to get to the top. And I think that's why we've seen this, you know, big jump just in the last year of his game is. You know, he wants to be here. He wants mm-hmm. to be, you know, playing in the National Hockey League and being a contributor every night. So, but you're right. He's down there to earn it and to pay the price and to show that he belongs at the next level, which is the way, you know, that Billy Guerin is, that's the direction we're going in as an organization. And I'm in on that 100%.
Yeah. Callan Addison is somebody that Wild fans are super excited about, having a great year in Iowa, a great trade by Billy Guerin to get a first-round pick and Callan Addison in the Jason Zucker trade. What's his progression like? And, you know, again, I think we all forget how young he is. Everybody expects him to be in the NHL right now. I mean, he's somebody that has to be patient as well.
Well, he does, and he does have that high level of skill. He distributes the puck well. He's got a good stick. He's working on continually to work on his defensive game. And what I really like about him is he has that snot and that grit. Even though he's not a 6'3" defender, he plays with an edge every night. And, you know, the opposing team doesn't like playing against him. He gets under their skin, We've seen it time and time again here this season in the American League. He's got a bright future. He's a very promising prospect for us.
Yeah, I watched the highlights the other night. It looked like he got just attacked in the corner at one point in that game. I don't know what he was doing before, but man, he was looked like he was just like almost taken and driven to the ice.
Yeah. When you look at it, he doesn't like to give much ice up. You know, he's got a very active stick. He's engaged in the defensive zone, and you know, he's really, when you really notice him is when he's skating, whether he's skating with the puck or jumping in the rush. He scored a nice goal the other night against Chicago. Matt Boldy found him late in the play on a kind of a late 3-on-2. And then when he's on the power play, he just has just really good abilities at distributing and finding those open seams. He found Matt Boldy late in the game on Saturday for I think it wasn't the tying goal, but it was in the last minute of the game with just a tremendous seam pass when we were up 6-on-4. So he's a good player and a bright future.
Connor Durer is somebody that looks like he's having a great year down there.
Connor came out of the gates flying, took a, you know, kind of flatlined a little bit, but now he's right back to where he was. And, you know, I kind of look at Connor as a multi-tool guy. He's plays in all situations down there. He's slowly becoming one of our best centermen, one of our best penalty killers. Obviously he has skill and does well on the power play, but his 5-on-5 play, what I've liked about him this year, still being a young player, he's now playing against the other team's best on a nightly basis. And we're hoping for really good things from him. And again, a high character kid that's driven to succeed.
Marco Rossi, how concerning was that whole experience back in January? Obviously we know what the results of why he couldn't play this year, complications from COVID-19. Sounds like he's doing much, much, much better. I don't know how much you're in touch with him, but, you know, first of all, when this first happened in early January, I mean, what was the concern level for somebody like you, that deals with this kid on a somewhat regular basis?
Yeah, well, obviously your number one concern is the person before the player. Kid's been, you know, he's over in a different country now, and his first time down in Minnesota. You worry about, you know, the communication between his parents and him, and what's going on there. But I spoke with Marco a week ago, and he is doing well. I think he's confident now in the process and the way things are going. But at the end of the day, it was a scary thing. And the question marks, right, that have been involved with this entire process, whether, you know, just say in general with COVID-19, and nobody knows the answers. So I think we're starting to find more out, and we're looking for big things for Marco. I think the number one is that he's not playing hockey this season, and he's losing a year of development, and that's been hard on him. But we know Marco, and again, I feel like I'm using the word character a lot right now, but he's one of those kids that if it was someone else, you may be more worried, but with Marco, he's going to work his way back to being in top form in no time.
Especially because, I mean, I'm sure you've seen on social media his workout routines. I mean, this is a gym rat. This is somebody that takes incredible care of his body and things like that. So you just know that he's going to put in a really good summer now that he's able to start training again lightly. You mentioned his development. I mean, how big of a concern is that? And should Wild fans now realize that they better be patient? I mean, this is somebody that's probably going to need time in Iowa now to just play some hockey come fall.
Oh, for sure. I don't think anyone wants to rush him, you know, after what he's gone through this season by any means. Mm-hmm. We're trying to, you know, not rush anyone. That's kind of our goal. Everyone has a development path. We're trying to, you know, help them reach it as quick as they can. But at the end of the day, we're not going to put somebody in a position where they're not going to succeed. So with Marco not playing this year, obviously we're in our medical staff's in close contact with the medical staff back home for him right now. And we're taking it step by step. And when it's time for him to play in the National Hockey League, it'll be time. And the Wild fans will have something to cheer for sure.
You know, Matt, you were somebody that dealt with a lot of medical issues in your career. I mean, there were times I looked at you at the end there in the Minnesota locker room, and it looked like you were put together with duct tape. You know,
I think I was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so you've dealt with this type of adversity. How much can that, you know, those type of stories about your career and what you had to endure health-wise, you know, help a kid? I mean, obviously, Marco's dealing with a little very different issue in terms of, you know, internal organ here and things like that. But how much does the adversity that you faced help you relate to some of these kids that are dealing with the stress at 19 years old, like Marco Rossi?
Well, and you know, it goes back to that old saying, Roos, where you can only control what you can control. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the message here too. You've got to be patient. But I always remember over my career when I think back, and you know, you can only it kind of gives you a breath of fresh air. A sense of relief. Okay, I can't control this right now. And you can walk away from the rink that day feeling a little bit better about what's, you know, what your current situation is. And I don't think Marco's any different. What I really love about this player is that during his time in Ottawa, and you watch him on the ice, and then like you mentioned, those workout videos, he's just a player that wants to be the best he can be. And when the timing's right, he's going to become that player.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Back here on Straight from the Source, Michael Russo, Matt Hendricks is my guest. And as always, you can subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/straight from the source for a discount. Not only do we have articles throughout the site, just tons and tons and tons of hockey, but every single sport, but also podcasts. Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun just finished their 2021 NHL trade deadline recap on two-man advantage on the edition of The Athletic Hockey Show that's on today as well. Craig Custance welcomes ESPN's Greg Wyshynski, Emily Kaplan, and at The Athletic's Don Willisician this week on The Full 60, and Chris Johnston from Sportsnet joined Jonah Siegel and James Myrtle on The Leaf Report. Maddie, can I ask you about Philip Johansson? Actually, I brought him up before the break. I mean, he's somebody that looks like he's having a really good year in Sweden as well. Obviously, third year since he's been drafted. Do you talk to him a lot? And is he somebody that we could see at some point you guys bring over here?
Well, Bomber talks to him quite a bit. Obviously, playing in Frölunda this season, he did have a nice year, and we're happy with his development and the path that he's on. You got to see a little bit more offense from Philip this season, mm-hmm. which was exciting. They're currently battling in a playoff series with Rogel right now. And I think they lost yesterday, so they're down 3-0. So hopefully they can bounce back. But in terms of his development, we're in discussions right now with what we want to do moving forward. I can't really say a lot mm-hmm. more than that. But again, as a young defender, these guys take time, and we think he's getting what he needs right now and playing in Sweden.
He seems like a tremendous kid, Matt. You know, I got to meet him in Iowa 2 years ago when he came here for a week to work out with Tim Army during the playoffs. Army bag skated him every single day. I think there was probably some points where Phillip's like, oh, why did I come over here again? But he just seems like a great kid. He seems he's got his head on his shoulder. Social media wise, I see that he always pays attention to everything that's going on with the Wild. You know, how much do you root for a guy like this, and also hope that he doesn't feel the pressure just being that first round pick, and that he's just got to realize, you know what, I just got to be the hockey player I am and not worry about what the expectations are from some people based on where I was drafted?
Well, and you know what, it's a good point that you bring up, because I think we're seeing him kind of come out of that now, and I think that's why he's finding a little bit more success on the ice. Like any young guy, the pressure does add up, you know, and for Philip, it's no different. And it is about kind of blocking the stuff that you can't control again, and worrying about your own game and the job that you have at hand. And for him, he's kind of coming out of that curve now, and coming up, I guess, would be to the top of that, where he's seeing down the other side of it. And okay, I'm just going to worry about myself, about my own game, and I'm going to become the player that I'm going to become over time.
Brandon Minnell, somebody that had a really good year over in Russia. I think that the Wild were not exactly, well, I know that Guerin was not exactly thrilled that he decided to go over Russia and not playing in Iowa this year, or frankly, he could be in Minnesota based on the taxi squad. What is his future like? And do you see your, you know, as an organization that you will re-sign him this summer?
Well, I talked to Brennan quite a bit during the season, watched a lot of his games, and he did. He had a great season over in Minsk in the KHL. And obviously, we would love to have him playing in Iowa and being part of our team down there. He's a very good defender who I think anticipates extremely well. And let's be honest, we all love guys that can produce points. So to lose him was difficult. Obviously, we hope we can get him back within the organization and have him playing for us, but time will tell there. Those discussions are also ongoing.
Yep. I did a big story on Brennan back in February that if people didn't read, they could read that and also hear his side of the story of why he did that. And, you know, totally, you know, from his standpoint, it made sense. And hopefully he has a future here, but, you know, sometimes Matt, you know, you're a great person to have in this role too, because you're proof positive that you could play a long time in the minors, develop there, and then have a good, successful NHL career. Do you think sometimes these kids nowadays get too impatient and just say, you know what, if I'm not going to be in Minnesota right away, I'm going somewhere else? I mean, you know,
and I do think that's true. I think, you know, even for me looking back, when you're around your peers, it's a measuring stick. And when you see other guys that you either played against or played with at college, played with in the minors, and they're having successful NHL careers and you're not, you're frustrated, you're upset, you feel you deserve more. And that's just human nature, I think. But at the end of the day, for me, there was some impatient times and periods over my career where I wanted to be in the NHL, obviously, earlier than I did. But, you know, I think it's your surrounding staff, your wife, your significant other, your parents, your agent, that kind of help keep you and steer you on that path. And then, you know, that's the great thing about the development role that hasn't been around that long is, you know, that's kind of, we're kind of in their corner with them now and helping them battle those thoughts and those feelings.
And Matty Hendricks played 247 AHL games, I believe, over 6 years. Went to the Calder Cup final. Was Bruce your coach then, or was Bob Woods?
Bruce was the coach, yeah.
Nice. Tell us about that. You got to play with him. So you were lucky enough to play Bruce with Hershey Bears, the Washington Capitals, and the Minnesota Wild. Amazing.
Right. One of my favorite Bruce stories was the first time I met him. They had signed me on an American League only deal. Brian McClellan was the assistant GM then, and he signed me to an American League deal. This was the year Hershey had won the Calder Cup the year before. So I left for Derek England, and I jumped in a car where we were working hockey schools and framing houses in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We jumped in the car and we drove out to Hershey to kind of get into our apartments and stuff. Well, the rest of the players were in Washington for main camp. So we were there about, I don't know, maybe a week, and a couple guys started trickling down, guys that got sent down. Bruce decided he was going to have a little bit of a barbecue for the guys in town. I remember walking up to the front door and knocking, and he opens the door, that big smile on his face, and he introduces himself. He says, "So you're a centerman, right?" And I said, "Well, I haven't played center in 4 years." He said, "Well, you're playing center this year." So that was kind of my introduction to him. And you know, he was great for me, though, because he gave me an opportunity, you know, one I'd been looking for. My previous, take Milwaukee out of the equation, when I was in Lowell and when I was in Rochester, they were dual affiliates, and I didn't get the benefit of the doubt a lot of nights. And when I got to Hershey, it was just Washington, and Bruce gave me an opportunity to try and prove myself, and it kind of catapulted my career going forward, so... A lot of thanks to Bruce there in Hershey, and darn it, we couldn't win that Calder Cup that year. But Carey Price came out of junior and went into Hamilton and was pretty darn good.
Yeah, unbelievable, an unbelievable career. Bruce, I mean, as a coach, I mean, he seems like a cartoon character at times. I mean, as a coach, you know, how good is he?
Well, I think his record kind of answers that question for you, but What I learned to love about Bruce as a coach is he got the best out of his players every night. No matter who you were playing, whether they were, you know, better than your team or not as good as your team, he always made it feel like there's an opportunity you can get beat tonight. So you better be ready and you better be prepared. And, you know, for me, just individually learning that way, it helped me be more consistent, which was something I struggled with as a young guy.
A question from Hideki asks, what is the best success story right now among the prospects that you've worked with, guys who might have not expected to become as good as they are that are really thriving?
Oh, man, that's a really good question. That's a tough question. I really like Philip Lindbergh's story this year and what he did. And you look at his numbers, they're just off the charts good. And then he takes the net this season, goes on and wins the championship. But then again, let's not forget about our first rounder and Matt Boldy in the year he had, obviously winning, World Juniors for Team USA. That's pretty exciting. So, you know, we've got a lot of good prospects, so, and a lot of great players. Looking at my list, you know, look what Adam Beckman was able to do coming down to the American Hockey League this year and did great for us back in Spokane now. Ryan O'Rourke, second rounder for us this year, 18-year-old kid who's surviving. Not only surviving, I shouldn't say that, he's playing well in the American Hockey League right now as an 18-year-old, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking for big things from him too. And our pool looks great. I like where our guys are at right now and the trends and the direction that they're going in.
By the way, what's the latest with Khuznadinov, your second round pick that got hurt? You know, really just unfortunate injury that happened in a tournament that he was going to be the number one center for Russia.
Right, and that really unfortunate. We really like his game. I loved him in the World Juniors. He kind of reminds me of a defensive juggernaut, but then he has opportunities on the power play and he scores big goals for him. So he's very smart, very well positioned, terrible injury for him. And he's going through that rehab process now. And, you know, you're looking for big things coming from him next season.
Right. Tim asks, can you let him know that they named the rinks in Happy Acres and Blaine after his youth coach, Mike Booth, who was to honor him for his retirement after 40 years for the city. Mike Booth, big instrumental in your career?
Very big. And my parents actually informed me of that information as well. So Mike Booth, his son Jordan, and I played growing up together. Jordan was a goaltender, and Mike actually coached me on some AAA teams, the Minnesota Junior North Stars. And we played some tournaments here locally, but the big tournament every summer was in Ottawa. So I got to go up there and really kind of learn what hockey was like. Being a smaller kid from Minnesota, it's nothing compared to the competition you're seeing in those big summer tournaments. So really happy for Mike, and he helped me a lot along the way, especially in those early years.
Bill asked, Damien Giroux is off to a great start in Iowa. What's the scouting report on him and what does he bring to the table?
Oh, Damien, what a great piece that we added there in Iowa. He's a spark plug. He plays with a ton of energy. Just loves going to the rink every day, whether it's a game day, a practice day. He's there to get better. He's got a smile on his face. He started the season out at center. He's currently been moved over to the wing. He's playing with Connor Dewar in the middle and Mitchell Chafee on the right side. And I do foresee Damien moving back to center at some point in time. I think he's a natural center. But that line's been playing so well, it's kind of hard to move him around right now. So Damien is doing well. He's finding the net now. He's getting some offensive numbers. But let's not forget, he's a great penalty killer as well and understands the game in the D zone. So. Good prospect for us. Good kid, though. Really, he's a lot of fun to talk to.
I got about four more questions for you. Here's a really good one. Jesse goes, you persevered at every level, Matt. People told you no, and you made it all the way to the big show. How do you keep the fire burning day to day, month to month, year after year? And he says, also, thanks for the hockey sticks one time. I was playing street hockey outside. You're the best.
Oh, cool story. Perseverance-wise, well, I guess I could share a little story. So that year after I played in Hershey with Bruce, I had a good season. I had a tough back injury at one point, so I missed some games. But I had a good year, and then I had a I had a really good playoffs, and I started getting offers from Europe where the money was, well, I'll just say it was astronomical in terms of what I was making playing in North America. And my wife and I were talking about it. And what do you think? You think we should go? You think we shouldn't? She said, the question was, she said, ask yourself, did you ever dream of playing in Europe? And I obviously I never thought of it that way. And the answer was definitely no. And she said, well, then why go? And it kept me here. And
yeah.
Obviously the rest is history. But, you know, I think every kid has a dream. And if the opportunities align and the chances and everything works out, you're going to get your chance. And it's up to you to make it count. Don't have any regrets.
That's a great story. Ben asks, did you hate playing against anyone?
Oh, man. There were definitely a few that I didn't love. Brad Marchant and I had a lot of battles in when he was in Boston and I was in Washington. David Perron is another one that used to get under my skin quite a bit. Alex Burrows.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys that played like me were the guys that I didn't necessarily like playing against. But now that I'm older and retired and way, way smarter, Roos, I got to tell you, I'd probably love having all those guys on my team.
Yeah. Who is one guy? I mean, you were a tough cookie, Matt. You got into some brouhahas. Who's the toughest fighter that you face?
Oh, gosh. That's a good question. I don't always remember the toughest ones.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just all jokes aside. Matt Carker had my number when he was playing in the minors in Wilkes-Barre and I was in Hershey. I think I bit off more than I could chew there. Well, there's a number of them for sure. Some I tried to avoid. Some, you know, there's not much you could do. But, you know, Big Luch used to strike some fear in me when he was in Boston. Zach Cassian was another squirrely guy. He was a big, you know, threw a lot of lefts, and I never had good luck with straight lefties. Wayne Simmons, you know, did a number on my nose one year when I was in Colorado. And he was still with LA, so. I didn't win them all, I'll tell you that much.
Two more questions. Rink guy Rob Dahlin asks, did you know you wanted to keep working in hockey, and did you want to work in player development department, or was there another area that you wanted to get into? And you know, what do you aspire? Do you want to continue in this role, or would you like to continue to work your way up in the hockey ops department?
Well, that's a good question. And you know, as I got further along in my career, I realized that I enjoyed working with the young guys, you know, when I was still a player. I enjoyed being, because, you don't really have a voice as a young guy. You come in, you try to mind your P's and Q's, you know, not be heard, be seen type of thing. And, you know, for me, I found that the most successful teams I played on were when those players felt a little bit more comfortable and felt more a part of the group and that their opinion mattered. And I found that I enjoyed that side of it. So, you know, coming into player development, it was kind of an easier transition. Obviously, I mentioned the flights and figuring out all my travel itinerary on my own. That wasn't so easy. But talking and communicating with the young guys has kind of come natural to me. So I've enjoyed that. And moving forward, I'm not sure. I never really was... how do I want to say it? Sold on being in this role. I also thought maybe I wanted to be a coach, but the more I'm involved with this and working with Bomber and working under Billy Guerin and his leadership, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing right now. So that's kind of where my mind is at.
Yep. And I know you're too humble to say it, but if you just Google Connor McDavid and Matt Hendricks, you'll see just how much appreciation Connor McDavid had for Matt during their time together in Edmonton, and how much Matt really helped take Connor under his wing. Last question for you, and I can't believe it's taken so long to talk about it. Erica wants to know about your paralyzer shootout move. If you've taught it to any Wild players, and if you don't know, just go on YouTube. Look at his paralyzer move. He was 11 for 18 in his shootout career. I just looked it up. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it worked out for a while. You know what, Roos? When they used to do a dry scrape before the shootout, the move was dynamite. And then they wanted to hurry things up a bit, so they stopped the dry scrape and the move stopped working. And I think it's because the goalie wouldn't slide side to side. He'd hit the ice and he would stick because the ice wasn't smooth. So that hurt me a little bit in that regard. But in terms of backstory on it, I actually learned it from Scott Bukestad.
Wow.
Who is Nick Bukestad's uncle. So Scott was one of my high school coaches. Him and Steve Larson coached me at Blaine High School. And I worked with Scott for 4 years there. And we worked on that move probably every day for 4 years. And I still never figured it out. I went to college and I still didn't figure it out. And I kept working on it. And then it dawned on me that I was always in a hurry as a player. I rushed everything. I did everything as fast as I could do it. And I found if I started making that fake shot just above that top hash mark, it usually gave me plenty of time to get around the goalie and get the puck up in the air. That was my problem. I used to get too close to the goalie and I couldn't raise it.
Yeah.
So it took me a long time to figure it out exactly, but Scott Bukestad is the guy that taught me how to do it.
I wonder if Nick knows how to do the move. I'll have to ask him when he gets back into the lineup because
he's too tall. He probably couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, I feel bad for Nick. He was playing his best hockey of the season and then he got into the fight and now he's out. So hopefully he'll be back in the lineup soon. But
he's been great for our group too. What a good person, great kid.
Yeah,
really happy. The thing, obviously, what he's going through right now, it's not exciting, but we're excited to get him back and healthy and ready to help us.
Yep. They make him good in Blaine. You got Hendricks, you got Riley Tufte, Nick Bukestad, got the great John Krasinski from The Athletic as well.
Oh, what a great guy John is, huh?
Yeah. He wasn't on your high school team, was he?
No, he was a few years older than me, okay. But just a tremendous guy. I still remember him walking the halls at Blaine, and he was always really nice to me and a good person. So
that's awesome. I hear he was a good wide receiver at Blaine.
He was a heck of a football player. There's no arguing that.
That's awesome.
Really good.
Yeah. And now he's our hoop specialty, the guy that makes the Athletic Minnesota tick. So, hey, I told you I'd keep you a half hour, and of course I kept you 50. So, Matt, I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. This was a lot of fun. I think Wild fans just eat up this stuff about prospects as well. And sometimes I just feel like I'm almost not equipped to write about it just because I don't see him as much as somebody like you or Bomber as well. So, continue the great work. Thanks so much for helping really educate Wild fans on a lot of these prospects, and I think they have a much better appreciation of some of these guys and some of these players that hopefully one day we'll see in a Wild uniform.
Absolutely, Roos. And before we go, I just want to say this prospect pool is exciting. Judd Brackett, our director of amateur scouting, and his staff continue to just do a phenomenal job finding these guys and doing their homework. And their job is extremely difficult, and they make it look easy to me somehow, and I don't know how they do it, but they're doing a heck of a job.
And extremely difficult in today's day and age where you just don't, these guys are not playing as much. It's hard to get viewings in person. Scouts, most scouts can't go to a lot of games as well, aren't allowed in the building. So this is going to be, just an interesting draft. And Judd, I know that they were extremely excited about last year's draft class. And frankly, the two under Paul Fenton were outstanding as well. So
they sure were.
Yep. Thanks so much. And if you're listening to this podcast, check out our comment section for each podcast episode of the Athletic app and rate subscribe to Straight from the Source on Apple. If you aren't already a subscriber, please go to theathletic.com/straightfromthesource and you can receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. Thanks, Maddie.
You got it, Roos. Take care and thank you.